Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. I want to talk about the collapse of the AAF. Really, there was a bit of humor in it at first, I think, and that's now morphed into sadness. Not for the collapse of the league, but for the ramifications to those involved with the league. Get to that in a second, but a few of you guys still want to talk about the topic from the last hour, so I'll let you have your word there, and then we'll move on to the AAF. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, is brought to you by Geico. Hey, everyone, here's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Do you need homeowners, renters, or motorcycle insurance, too? Get it all at geico.com. How about Kathy in Portland? Kathy, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Well, hello. I love your show. You're the only person I've heard in sports media say that Durant shouldn't go to New York. Why on earth would Kevin Durant want to go to New York?
Well, I mean, I know why he would go to New York. I know why he would want to go to New York. I don't know why he would want to go to the Knicks specifically.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. You know what our affiliate interrupts your show with? Barbecue Nation.
Where do you live? You're in Portland?
I'm in Portland.
Is barbecue big in Portland?
I guess so.
I shouldn't really be celebrating this on the air. Hey, you're preempted by slow-smoked ribs. But
it makes me so annoyed. You'll be talking basketball. I love NBA. You'll be talking basketball, and all of a sudden barbecue comes
on. Is it like a hosted show? What is it? Yeah. Is it like an infomercial? How does it work?
No, it's based out of Portland, and they have a couple of affiliates that are, another.
But I mean, like, is it like a guy that comes on, like Bob the Barbecuer, and he's like, hey, it's Bob the Barbecuer, and welcome to the barbecue hour.
Yeah.
And then he has, like, some experts in barbecue?
Yeah.
I'm fascinated now. I want to hear how this show goes.
Oh, like, don't.
I didn't know there was such an avid. I know people like barbecue, but I didn't know there was an avid like analysis for barbecue
sad,
audience.
It's
but
the, sad. Anyway, I always upsets me when you talk NBA and the barbecue show goes on.
Well, thank you for listening, Kathy. I guess the Food Network is a huge deal. People, I don't get it, and trust me, I'm not a judger. Do you? I don't get why people want to watch people cook food. Like, it doesn't make it. I don't understand. In fact, in a building I used to live in, there was a gym there. And I would go down to the gym in the building. And this always cracked me up in a sense. There would always be this one girl on the elliptical machine. And she was there. Like, the reason it's noteworthy is because she was there, like, every time. No matter when I went, I felt like I would see this girl. And I couldn't help but glance at the time on her elliptical machine, and it would be something absurd, like 2.5 hours. Like, she'd been on the elliptical machine for 2.5 hours. And always, without fail, on the TV, it was like some sort of baking show. So it just felt like some sort of strange self-inflicted torture to be on the elliptical machine for like 3 hours while watching people make cupcakes the entire time. I never really understood.
I'm curious. I wonder what other types of programming preempts maybe the Robin Lundberg show. Is there like an antiques roadshow, some kind of bass fishing program?
I guess for each market, it depends on what might float your boat. I just didn't know like there was barbecue radio shows.
It's pretty big in the Northwest. I pulled it up. It's called Barbecue Nation with Jeff Tracy.
Okay.
And it's in Portland, Seattle, I think Dallas, Phoenix. It's kind of got the whole West Coast.
Oh, I feel better now. It's not just like one person specifically was like, you know what, we're going to put this barbecue on instead of this guy.
Today is the 199th Barbecue Nation show, so we're close to 200.
How long is it?
It looks like it's like an hour.
Okay, that makes. If it was longer than an hour, that felt like a stretch. That feels like an hour long radio show on a weekly basis for a specific. You know, like look, podcasts have proven how big niche markets can be, right? I mean, one of the things, if you're going to start a podcast right now, my advice to you would be to find your niche, because that's how you differentiate yourself in the podcast market, because so many people have a podcast. You know, like, first thing you do when you meet somebody nowadays, you walk up and you, hey, what's your name? And he's like, oh, I'm Kurt. I have a podcast. You're like, oh, yeah, that's right. You have, just like everybody else, you got a podcast. Let's go to Gerald in South Carolina. Gerald, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's going on, Gerald?
I'm doing great, man. You?
I'm doing well. Feeling good. Feeling great. How are you?
Man, I want to talk about Zion going to, if he goes to Phoenix, he'd be a beast over there with Booker and Ayton over there in Phoenix.
Uh-huh. Well, Chris, who runs our board, is actually a Suns fan.
Man, kind of weird. I'm from South Carolina, but I grew up a Suns fan watching them on TV, so been a lover ever since.
It's been tough recently, huh, man? You all right?
Yes, it's been a struggle. It's been a struggle, but if he goes over there, with Booker and Ayton, it'd be good things in the West over there for Phoenix.
I think wherever he goes, it'd be good things. Chris, is this something that consumes your mind?
Yes, it definitely consumes my mind. He's right.
He's going to the Knicks. Forget about it.
I just have a hard time believing the Suns get back-to-back years of the number one pick.
But
I have a hard time conceptually.
Sure, I understand that feeling, but probability theoretically doesn't work that way, right?
But I think the odds are worse this year for them to get the number one pick, too, even though they're the second or third worst team because they stacked
the Sure, but my point is what happened last year should have no bearing on what happens this year.
Yeah, but I mean, he's right. Booker, Ayton, and Zion, you put those three together, I just don't know how that goes wrong. But the Suns, for years, have not been able to figure it out, and Robert Sarver's up there with Dolan as the worst NBA owner in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, organizational dysfunction and ineptness can corrupt almost anything. I think the only kryptonite for that is a transcendent star. Like one that, you know, like no matter how poorly the Cavs were run, they were going to succeed with LeBron James, right? Like no matter how, there was various levels of success, but no matter how poorly they were run, they were going to succeed with LeBron because he was just so great. I'm not saying Zion is LeBron. They pump the brakes. Everybody needs to pump the brakes on stuff like that. You're talking about the best player in history, in my mind, or, you know, 1A, 1B, him and Jordan, whatever. Zion, though, is a transcendent talent, and that should be enough to hopefully thwart any of the shortcomings of an organization he goes to. You at least have to hope.
Does he possibly, if you're a free agent, would you not want to play with him because he would overshadow your star power? Like if you're a player, big ego, I think like Kyrie Irving, player with a big ego, would he be afraid of Zion outshining him in a market?
Yeah, I think that depends on the guy. Yeah, that's a Kyrie is who the heck knows what's going on with Kyrie? Like, you know, he's a cat that marches to the beat of his own drum. Let's put it I'll put it nicely. Kyrie is I don't know what Kyrie wants. That's a hard thing to figure out, right? Like, Kyrie, when he was with Cleveland, got to take more shots than LeBron, got to take the biggest shot in NBA history, most likely, right? A pull-up three in Game 7 of the NBA Finals. He had the green light to take a pull-up. Nobody was criticizing him. Nobody was like, Kyrie, don't take that shot. LeBron wasn't criticizing him. He was like, that's fine. And then we hear he wanted his own team. He goes to Boston, gets his own team, and now he's not happy in Boston. So I'm not sure exactly what Kyrie wants. I don't know if Kevin Durant would be worried about that so much because Kevin Durant already went to Golden State, you know, and they had stars. Now he's felt the ramifications of that. I think what Kevin Durant's probably looking for is something to undo that. He's gotten his championships, you know, whatever we think about the way the championships came to be, they are championships. They exist historically. They can never be taken away. I think he's now trying to repair the narrative.
Durant wants to be the face of a franchise.
Yes, I think the face of a franchise, but I think more than anything else, he wants like some justification. He wants some, you know, he wants.
And that's why he's leaving Golden State. I mean, why would you leave the Warriors? I mean, they could still go. I mean, they could still be dominant for the next, you know, 3-4 years. They could win championships. Why would you leave?
Because
Curry is always going to be the face of the franchise. You think Warriors, you're always going to think Steph Curry. It's never going to be think Warriors and Kevin Durant. I mean, that's why he's leaving.
Yeah, but I don't think it's quite. I mean, that sort of touches on it, but I don't think it's quite as simple as being the face of the franchise as much as it is So he was in Oklahoma City. He won an MVP. You know, people forget the Oklahoma City Thunder were competing for the championship. They went to the finals. They happened to have Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Russell Westbrook on the same team. They went to the finals. And they were a game away from the finals the year before Durant went to Golden State. When he went to Golden State, I don't think he realized just how severe the backlash would be from the idea of, and I'm part of it, he went to a 73-win team. Of course you're going to win a championship. I think he thought all he needed to be considered the best or you know, legendary or whatnot was a championship. But I think he found out that the championships in Golden State weren't as satisfying as he thought going in. So I think what he's looking for is that satisfaction of, no matter what, no one can say Kevin Durant's not an all-time great player. That's ludicrous, right? He's an all-time great player. But there's a certain image that control that I think he's looking for, where if he goes somewhere else and doesn't have to win a title there, but if he goes somewhere else and takes a team that's like on the cusp or in the middle of the pack and takes them to competing for the championship, then I think that does a lot to add to the whole package. Because you'd have the Thunder career, you'd have the titles won with the Warriors and the criticism that happened, but then if he bookends that with success somewhere else, as the guy, as Anthony was mentioning, I think that does a lot for the entire career arc and could help him go out on a little bit of a higher note from a perception standpoint. Because I don't think anyone has ever criticized him for his ability on the court. I think people just criticized his choice in going to Golden State. All right, the AAF and its collapse. What is the lesson from that? I'll tell you coming up next. It's the Robin Lundberg Show, and it's here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show, CBS Sports Radio. AAF, no more. Anybody want a complete history of the AAF? I think I could do it in about 15 seconds. All right, here's the complete history of the AAF in 3, 2, 1. League was announced. Some dude got rocked. They couldn't pay their players. Someone saved the league. Johnny Manziel signed. League done. That's about the complete history of the AAF. And, you know, there was part of it that was funny because you saw it just end. And then the more you found out since then, it's really not funny. It's really not funny what happened because they treated people terribly. You know, like, a lot of times we worship money and praise businessmen, and a lot of times those things come with the side effects of a lack of empathy and humanity. And it's disgraceful what happened to people in the AAF. It's disgraceful. You know, the whole league just stopped. So not only just the employees who took a job with this place, they're gone, they're done, they're no longer getting paid, but these players who, you know, football's a serious thing, man. It's not a joke. It's a game in a sense, but it's not a game. It's not like other sports, man. And you got guys who got hurt playing, who don't have health insurance now. You have guys who didn't have the money, were just trying to chase a dream, who were stuck with hotel bills or had to pay their own flights home. It's gross. And what are the lessons from the AAF's collapse? I think a lot of people made the lesson about people not wanting spring football. To be fair, that's not really the lesson from this. It's not like no one was watching. Look, the AAF wasn't a huge thing, but the AAF didn't fail because of terrible ratings. That's not why they failed. Personally, I think football is an awful futures investment. If you are deciding to make an investment on something for the future, I would strongly advise against football. Strongly. One, because we see how hard it is to sustain a league and run a league. Every football league has basically failed. Two, because of what I just mentioned, football is not a game. There are safety concerns. therefore their insurance concerns, therefore their sustainability of the sport concerns. That's not something I'm investing in the future. And that includes the XFL. You know, the XFL to me feels like Vince McMahon's ego trying to rectify his one major mistake and make good on that. I don't think that's a smart reason for doing anything. But with that said, the AAF didn't fail because, you know, zero people were watching. It also wasn't, you know, a wild success. It's kind of hilarious. I think I was on the air the day after their first game, and the ratings were good for that first game. And think about the tone then versus the tone now. And that was, what was that, a month and a half ago, 2 months ago now? That's it. It was all good just a week ago. I mean, that league failed because of poor management, like a lot of things fail. Because it's not something you just throw together. A football league, you need the television deals, you need the stadium deals, you need the travel, you need the insurance, you need everything. And they didn't generate enough buzz or interest to create massive profits. And they clearly got over their skis. Clearly. I mean, note to self, do not start a professional sports league without enough funding to get through at least one season. Come on. How did they do that? How did they greenlight the league in the first place? That's my question. Not what happened. I know what happened. How did they greenlight the league in the first place? They missed payroll like that. I think it might have been the first check. The second check, it was going into week two or something like that. They missed payroll. And then that dude, Tom Dundon, came in. Was he the owner of the Hurricanes, I think? He came in and saved the league. And I always thought that deal was fishy because all of a sudden he's giving them $250 million. And I'm thinking to myself, they already couldn't make payroll and he's just going to give them $250 million. There has to be a catch there. I'm sure we'll learn that full story. And he deserves to be shamed for the way that the league ended. He deserves to be shamed for that. It's disgraceful to allow that to happen to other people, to just treat them like they don't matter. Their livelihoods, their dreams, their health doesn't matter. You deserve to be shamed for that. But he doesn't deserve blame for the collapse of the AAF. He saved it. It was going to collapse already if he didn't come in and save the day. So I'll shame him for not having a heart in the way it ended, but I'm not going to blame him for it ending. Charlie Ebersol, Bill Polian, and all them, what were you thinking? Please articulate it. Explain it to people. You know, I think all the players signed a three-year, $250,000 deal. That shows you what that was worth. They didn't even get the first year of that. Then they're, you know, I've heard that some of them are being asked to pay for their jerseys even. They were stuck with their hotel bills, like I said. Apparently, Denard Robinson, who, of course, was a college standout, played in the NFL, tore his ACL, now doesn't have health insurance to pay for it. It's a sad situation. And, you know, really, the lesson to be taken from it is not about football. It's about being prepared before you go on a massive endeavor. Now, at the same time, that dovetails into the whether another football league can sustain and succeed. And ultimately, it's going to be tough, I think, because the market share is so cornered by the NFL. The NFL is such a Goliath. So the existing product is a Goliath that has people in pattern, has people in habit, where they know this is when the NFL season kicks off. Every Sunday, this is what I'm doing. Oh, there's a Monday game. There's a Thursday game. fantasy football, gambling, all in tied in the NFL. And then after the Super Bowl, it's the offseason. But even in the offseason, there's free agency. There's the draft. So it's a, you know, there's stories about Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy, right? It's a year-round thing now. It's not just a seasonal thing. It's a year-round thing. So you have to compete with that, and you have to compete with the troubles that come along with the sport itself and launching a league. That's a lot of personnel. It's a lot of space you need. It's a lot of travel. It's a lot of treatment. It's a lot of liability because it's a dangerous sport. It's a lot. It's a lot. So while the AAF didn't fail, don't let people tell you the AAF failed because the TV ratings were so anemic they had to take it off the air. That's not why it failed. There was nothing to celebrate there. There was nothing to, you know, make fun of there. That it was, there were some people watching. It wasn't the biggest thing in the country, but there were some people watching. It didn't fail because of that. It failed because they went into something they weren't ready to be in. And it shows you just because some people like a product doesn't mean, you know, they're just going to consume it to a level that you can sustain yourself when you're not prepared to sustain yourself from the beginning. And that's really just more the lesson of that. It's not easy. That's why these leagues fail. It's not easy. 855-212-4227. What's your reaction to the end of the AAF? You know, I started with a chuckle just because, like, it's kind of hilarious. They would fold out of nowhere. And that's gone from a chuckle to some real sadness because I really feel for the people involved with the league, the people that lost their job, the players that were chasing the dream who were treated so poorly. You know, some of them found out on Twitter while they were at practice, continued practicing for a while, you know, and they thought they had something going. There were, you know, again, there were some people watching. There were some fans in the seats. But the NFL is the NFL for a reason. Football is not, of all the sports, it's hard to launch a sports league, period. I just saw Ice Cube talking about how difficult it is to launch a sports league, and his is the big three, right? Like, you know, featuring guys out of, and you only have how many people are playing in the big three total? 30? You know, like, it's not that, it's a lot easier to run the big three than it is a professional football league, and Ice Cube was talking about how hard it is to run a sports league. It is difficult, especially with football, for so many different reasons. And the only takeaway is, you know, I think it's shameful, whether it was Dundon or whomever, how they treated the people there at the end. And I think it was foolish how they decided to green light and go with a league that wasn't ready with funding to get through a season. That's foolish.
You're listening to The Robin Lundberg Show.
Busta Rhymes raps at the speed the AAF lasted for on this track. AAF is here, now it's gone. Break your neck. Break your neck pace. You get whiplash trying to follow the existence of the AAF. Here today, gone tomorrow. I really do feel for the players and the employees and everything in the league, but whew, that was a poorly thought out operation. I think they just wanted to be first. You know, they knew the XFL was coming. They wanted to be first. And I don't, you know, it's a little different for the XFL when they come because they probably have more money behind them. I'm sure Vince McMahon has secured some of the funds to get them through at least one season. But it also doesn't bode the best for them either. Again, the XFL just kind of feels like Vince McMahon's ego to me. I don't know this for sure, but the one thing, like, he's celebrated as the wrestling promoter and the greatest ever in that, and obviously the WWE and its success speaks for itself. WrestleMania is a huge deal every year. We'll talk about that a little later in the show. But the one failure that sticks out on his resume is the XFL, and it feels like him trying to undo that. 855-212-4227. Let's go to Donnie in Boston. Donnie, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's going on, Donnie?
Hey, Robin, you're making some good points this morning, doing a good show. I really like it. I wanted to bring up two points and kind of hear what you thought, maybe what other listeners thought, too. On the AAF, definitely feel sorry for these guys and for anybody that doesn't realize what it takes to just take a hit in football and get hurt in any way. It doesn't really get what these guys were given up just to try to make, maybe not even make money, but just show themselves in any kind of way to get to the NFL. It's a huge sacrifice, and these guys are going to go back to working at, you know, any kind of menial job to try to make ends meet. So I certainly feel sorry for them. I do think the AAF came way too early and tried to be way too fast, again, trying to beat Vince McMahon to the punch. And I think we've hit a point of saturation in football. I mean, I love football and college football on Saturdays. My wife deals with watching a couple games. Now my son and my daughters are kind of into it. Sunday, she'll put up with a game in the afternoon after the kids' sports and running around. And then she's like, holy shit, it's Monday night. I got to watch football.
This is another one of those. I feel bad for this guy had to get dumped because he said a word he shouldn't have said on the air, but it was an innocent thing. He wasn't trying to be a jerk. He's just speaking like people talk sometimes. To his point, what he was saying is, and I get this, it's almost like you get a break from football after the Super Bowl, right? And that helps you. It's like hibernation in a sense, right? Like a bear. Think of it like a bear. A bear in the winter has stored up on all its food. It's eating all this salmon. How much salmon could the bear have? The bear will have salmon until it can have no more salmon. It will rid the stream of all the salmon until it is so full that it has no choice but to sleep for months. And then the bear sleeps for months. And when the bear wakes up, it's starving. It needs more salmon. But it doesn't need more salmon right after it just rid the stream of salmon. It's full. It needs to hibernate. And I think there is a case to be made for that with football fans. During the fall, if you're a football junkie, you're watching football all day Saturday and all day Sunday. And sometimes Monday night, and sometimes Thursday night, and sometimes Sunday night. Like, at a certain point, you might go, all right, this is the time I'm not watching. This is the time of year I'm not watching football. And I'm checking out this basketball game, or I'm checking out this baseball game. But I'm not sitting there, not moving for 9 hours, 2 days a week. So there's that part of the argument. And there's the part of the argument, like I said, that the NFL also doesn't have the offseason to the same thing where it just ceases to exist. The Aaron Rodgers story was a big story this week. Odell Beckham getting traded was a huge story a couple weeks ago. The draft is coming up. Is Kyler Murray going to go number one? That's a story. So it's a thing that's I think the only time the NFL's not actually talked about at all is like June and July. Those are the months where nobody is talking about the NFL at all, for the most part. But that's barely anything. So that is a huge factor. But I think that the biggest factor for the AAF is just they weren't prepared. And launching a sports league is hard. Launching a football league is even harder. More people, more liability, all that stuff. If I'm advising you, if I was your like advisor, I would say, a futures bet, if I'm making a futures bet, football's not something I would make that bet on. A present bet, sure. A futures bet, no. Patrick in Portland, Maine. Patrick, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's going on?
Hey, how's it going? Yeah. So similar to your salmon and bear analogy, it's like Mark Cuban said about the NFL, pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered, right? So, yeah, I think there is an oversaturation of football to some point, but the reason I called is that I feel completely opposite of the previous caller about the AAF and their players. I don't feel bad for these guys at all. I mean, look, you're trying to play football. You're trying to play a sport for a living. I don't care about quote-unquote sacrifice.
Football's like, not a sport like that, man. You can't diminish football like that. Like, you can't trivialize how dangerous that is. It's not like it's not like baseball or basketball. I see what you're saying. I feel bad for anybody. Look, I feel bad for anybody in any walk of life. If their dream was just gone, or their livelihood was just removed, or, you know, they were put in a tough circumstance. Like, I, as a human being, I feel for anyone put in that spot. But a lot of times, hold on 1 second, I'll let you finish. Lot of times with a sports talk radio caller, for instance, I'll hear this about football players. They're getting to play a game for a living. Football is not a game like that. Football is a dangerous, violent activity that can have serious ramifications on your body and your mind. There's a reason I didn't play it. There's a reason my kids aren't going to play it. And you can't trivialize it as just a game when it is an activity that really human beings probably shouldn't be playing, but these guys were pursuing.
Sure, that's a fair point, and I played the game my whole life, and my point is that it's a profession, and there are other dangerous professions in this world, such as, you know, people that work out on oil rigs and people that are welders and things like that. So if you're going to take something like that and then consider what these guys, you know, they have options, whereas they might not have options is what you're insinuating, and I don't think that these guys don't have options.
Well, I'm not saying they don't have options with their lives. I'm not saying they're limited, they're football-only robots. I'm not saying that, but it would be anything, whatever job you're talking about. I don't care if it's a cab driver or, you know, a farmer, whatever. I don't care. If somebody is doing something and then it ceases to exist and they have to pay for their transportation home or they don't know what they're doing, that's a stressful thing. I've been through it. You know, people, it's not something that is easy to deal with. So I feel for anyone in that situation, athlete or not. It just so happens this is something we're following, given what I do for a living. And it just so happens that it's something, you know, there's real life examples of guys who got hurt doing this and now can't even pay for their medical bills for how they got hurt doing this. So, yeah, I feel bad for them.
Yeah, that's a fair point, and I wanted the AAF to succeed, I think, the same way you did, but at the same time, I think the way you said it was set up for failure, but I'll hang up now. Some good points, and I enjoy your show. Thank you.
Thank you. I was curious more than anything about the AAF. I didn't have a vested interest in it. I said this when it launched. It was more an experiment for me because I was curious. I don't know how much people are in. I said this when it launched. I don't know how much people are into football or how much people are conditioned, like, to love the NFL. It's a communal thing. You know, everybody knows where to be on Sunday in the fall, whether it's that's when you place your bets, whether that's when you get your fantasy team ready, whether that's where you go to the local bar to root on your team, whether that's where you get together with your buddies, whether that's when you have your alone time in your man cave or whatever you want to call it. Like, there's a communal aspect of it that I think is probably the single biggest reason the NFL is what it is. You know, more than just people love football itself. Now, I'm not saying people don't love football. Clearly they do, or else it wouldn't be as big. But I was genuinely curious how much people actually love football versus how much people have been ingrained in this fabric of our society. I don't think we even got the answer to that necessarily because, again, the AAF didn't fail because people just weren't watching it at all. It certainly didn't become, you know, it was in the national news cycle about three times. After the first weekend, it was in the national news cycle because the ratings were good for the opening night. I think they tied the NBA that night head-to-head. So that was in the national news cycle. It was in the national news cycle again when they couldn't pay their players about a week and a half later. It was in the national news cycle. It was in the national news cycle when Johnny Manziel signed. And that game actually did well on television, the game he played in, his first game. And then it was in the national news cycle when the league folded. I think it was in the national news cycle how many did I just say? Four instances. And that's it. But it didn't fail. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise. I'm always going to be fair and try and tell you the best version of the truth as I know it. It didn't fail because nobody was watching and the networks were like, we have to get this off. Nobody's watching. That isn't why it failed. It also wasn't some runaway success where people couldn't stop watching it. But that's not the reason it failed. The reason it failed is because they weren't prepared for this league to sustain, the people behind it. Andrew in Tucson, Arizona. Andrew, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's going on, Andrew?
Hey, man. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
So I do agree with you on the whole hibernation point, which is a kind of a weird point. But
I thought it was pretty smart, actually, when I was making that.
The salmon in the river.
Yeah, no, I get it. I know what you're talking about.
But my question to you is, like, I know we feel bad for these players, but it just seemed like a total corporate disaster because, you know, there was no time to breathe after watching the NFL. And, you know, do you think if college football played their season out during the same timeline that, you know, college football would kind of fail? Do you think that if they you know, played in that.
Well, it's what I said about Zion Williamson earlier, Andrew. A rising tide lifts all boats. I've found that to be one of those sayings that rings true. So, yes, I think college football would be far less successful if it didn't run in conjunction with the NFL when people are into football. Like, that is football season, right? You feel that crisp air come in the fall. And one of the, you know, it's like baseball starting off. One of the reasons people love baseball opening day is because you're thinking warm weather's around the corner. One of the reasons people tolerate a little bit of a chill in the air come in the fall is because they know it's football season. And there's just all these things that come with football season, whether it's tailgating or gambling or fantasy or, you know, going to game, whatever it is. And I think, you know, college football benefits from that, of course. And they help each other, college football in the NFL. And I think if college football were at a different time period, not only would it be competing with other sports, where it's not really in the fall, it also wouldn't be benefiting from the residual wave that the NFL provides.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, and at the very end, they tried to build their league as a developmental league for the NFL, and I think we all know the only true developmental league for the NFL is college football. That's all I got, man. Thanks.
Yep, no problem. Let's go to Jared in Pennsylvania. Jared, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's going on, Jared?
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it. I got about 1 minute before a hard out, just letting
all
you
right.
know.
Real quick, yeah, I just want to get your take on this. Like, I don't understand how these extremely successful businessmen so underestimated the cost of running this league that they had to fold. Like, that's something I can't understand.
Arrogance, I would guess.
Okay, all right. That makes sense. I mean, I couldn't put two and two together with this. It just doesn't make any sense.
No, you're right. No, your question is correct, Jared. Your line of thinking is correct. How in the world do you start a league without enough funding to get through the first year, right? Like,
I mean, these are successful businessmen. You know, I would think they know how to spend their money wisely. You know,
I think people get caught up in something, and then ego and arrogance. You know, pride almost always comes, or pride comes before the fall.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
There's
yep.
another. If I'm just using sayings to say, but pride comes before the fall, and the AAF certainly fell right on its face. Everybody involved. 855-212-4227, 855-212-4227. Continue to weigh in on the AAF if you want, and the lessons learned. Little basketball comparison coming up next with some all-time greats as well. It's the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.